most objective observers today would say that in 2003, there was no urgent need to address the threat posed by Saddam with a large-scale invasion, and therefore the war was not necessary. But this is a question President Bush seems not to want to grapple with. I sat stone-faced and motionless in the elegant White House East Room, trying hard not to show any outward concern in front of the assembled inquisitors. But I could feel the muscles in my body tensing up as I listened to the president's tortured response to a straightforward question. It was near the end of a primetime press conference in April 2004. The president had called on John Dickerson, a White House correspondent for Time magazine. Having covered Bush since the 2000 campaign, Dickerson was a comfortingly familiar face. Risk-averse by nature, the president hesitated to call on reporters he did not recognize, preferring to stick largely to the recommended names highlighted with a Sharpie on the seating chart resting on the podium. The list always included the most prominent journalists from the major networks, wire services, and newspapers, as well as at least one radio and one news magazine reporter. The advantage of this approach was that the questions from traditional media correspondents predictably focused on the week's current headlines. Rarely was a question asked that we hadn't prepared the president for ahead of time. Bush was hardly ever thrown completely off his game, unable to either fall back on his broad philosophical views or find a way to segue to a few familiar talking points he could recite in his sleep. This night, I'd highlighted the name of a different news magazine correspondent, primarily because Dickerson had been called on more recently. But I also knew his probingly clever questions had a way of knocking the president off script. The result might be to change the next day's news coverage from what we sought the focus to be, or, even worse yet, create some actual news. For example, in one previous press conference, Dickerson had asked the president about whether he thought Muslims worship the same God as Christians. In another, he'd asked whether he agreed with many of his supporters that homosexuality is immoral. These controversial social topics were too far outside the president's comfort zone to elicit expansive public comment. When Bush had responded by saying that, yes, Muslims worship the same God as Christians, some evangelical leaders were dismayed. And when he answered the question about homosexuality by referring to tolerance for all individuals, his initial remark that we're all sinners caused some critics on the left to cry foul, because Bush was implying that homosexuality was sinful. But Dickerson had a disarmingly, easygoing, down-to-earth manner, not unlike the president's, and this made Bush partial to him. His question would be the next-to-last one asked, and it was deceptively simple. "Thank you, Mr. President," the clean-cut, golden-haired reporter began, as he was handed the wireless microphone and rose to ask his question. "In the last campaign, you were asked a question about the biggest mistake you'd made in your life, and you used to like to joke that it was trading Sammy Sosa. You've looked back before 9/11 for what mistakes might have been made. After 9/11, what would your biggest mistake be, would you say, and what lessons have you learned from it?" The president began with a lighthearted quip. "I wish you would have given me this written question ahead of time so I could plan for it," the assembled reporters chuckled. "John, I'm sure historians will look back and say, gosh, he could have done it better this way or that way. You know, I'm sure something will pop into my head here in the midst of this press conference, with all the pressure of trying to come up with an answer, but it hadn't yet." His response was followed by an agonizingly long pause. "Have you ever experienced seconds that felt like minutes? 100 thoughts flowed through my brain while that terrible silence hung embarrassingly in the air. I found myself thinking, come on, sir, this one is not difficult. Just say something like, I'm sure I've made plenty of mistakes and history will judge them, but I've got a job to do, and while some would like me to look backward, you can even use your favorite expression, navel gaze. I believe it's important to keep looking forward, thinking about the important objectives we are trying to accomplish. That's what the American people expect me to do, and that's what I intend to do." The assembled reporters stirred uneasily in their seats as the silence continued. When someone is struggling in public, everyone around feels uncomfortable. No American wants to see our president look awkward or embarrassed on a national platform. Yet that is what we were witnessing now. As President Bush continued to agonize over a response, I blamed myself. Why didn't we throw that one at him in the murder board session beforehand? We used it before, without specifying after 9/11. It's such an obvious one. What is wrong with me? But then a counter-reaction kicked in. Wait a second. We're talking about the President of the United States here. He didn't get to be president without being able to bat down a simple question. We've talked about mistakes. We've talked about 9/11. We've talked about the invasion of Iraq. Why can't he pull up some of those talking points? And all the while, as the debate raged in my head, the president continued to stumble, while I wanted desperately to scream out an answer for him. The pauses lasted only a few seconds, but at the time, it seemed much longer than that. Finally, the president came out with a rambling, rather incoherent, ultimately unsatisfying response to Dickerson's question. I would have gone into Afghanistan the way we went into Afghanistan. Even knowing what I know today about the stockpiles of weapons, I still would have called upon the world to deal with Saddam Hussein. See, I happen to believe that we'll find out the truth on the weapons. That's why we've sent up the independent commission. I look forward to hearing the truth, exactly where they are. They could still be there. They could be hidden, like the 50 tons of mustard gas in a turkey farm. One of the things that UN Arms Inspector Charlie Dulfolk talked about was that he was surprised at the level of intimidation he found amongst people who should know about weapons, and their fear of talking about them because they don't want to be killed. There's a terror still in the soul of some of the people in Iraq. They're worried about getting killed, and therefore, they're not going to talk. But it will all settle out, John. We'll find out the truth about the weapons at some point in time. However, the fact that he had the capacity to make them bothers me today, just like it would have bothered me then. He's a dangerous man. He's a man who actually not only had weapons of mass destruction, the reason I can say that with certainty is because he used them, and I have no doubt in my mind that he would like to have inflicted harm or paid people to inflict harm or trained people to inflict harm on America because he hated us. I don't want to sound like I've made no mistakes. I'm confident I have. I just haven't. You just put me under the spot here, and maybe I'm not as quick on my feet as I should be in coming up with one. In desperation, he turned and called for another question, relief obvious on his features as he said, "Yes, Ann." Watching Bush struggle with the simple question, I sensed, as many others in the room did, that he was hung up on what he thought the press still sought to extract from him, an acknowledgement, 1 year after the fact, that his decision to go into Iraq was a mistake. That's why, unwilling to make any such admission, his response had morphed into yet another justification of the invasion, even though this was exactly the opposite of what Dickerson had asked. As we were walking out of the East Room at the end of the press conference and moving briskly to catch up with the president, Dan Bartlett and I conversed in muted tones. We both agreed that the Dickerson response had not gone well. The president, his tie now loosened, was waiting for us just inside the main entrance to the unlit state dining room. The only light came from the cracks of the sliding doors, the two openings to the dimly lit red room, and the opening to the old family dining room nearby. Dan and I knew the drill. It was the president's bedtime, and he didn't care for an in-depth critique of his performance right after leaving the media pressure cooker. So we began by complimenting the president on hitting the right tone and getting his message across on questions about what the government had been doing pre-9/11 to combat terrorism and Iraq. Then Dan tactfully broached the awkward response to the Dickerson question. We had to bring it up in the little time we knew we could hold the president's attention. "Yeah, I know," Bush said. "I kept thinking about what they wanted me to say, that it was a mistake to go into Iraq, and I'm not going to. It was the right decision." His tone was cocksure and matter-of-fact, not testy. I heard him assert such certitude about the decision often in casual conversation. He felt pretty good about the performance that evening, despite stumbling on the Dickerson question. "I thought you were on the right track," I said, "when you mentioned how historians would look back and judge your decisions. All you needed to add was to say that you plan to stay focused on the future." "Yeah, that's right," Bush agreed. "All right, guys, thank you for your good work." And he headed around the corner in his usual swift manner to join the butler who was holding the elevator to his private residence above, followed by a Secret Service agent. There were many other times, in private and public, when the president defended the most fateful decision of his administration. But few will be remembered as vividly as the one he made that night. It became symbolic of a leader unable to acknowledge that he got it wrong, and unwilling to grow in office by learning from his mistake, too stubborn to change and grow. My knowledge of George W. Bush suggested several reasons for his inability to admit a serious mistake on his part. One was his fear of appearing weak. A more self-confident executive would be willing to acknowledge failure, to trust people's ability to forgive those who seek redemption for mistakes, and show a readiness to change. Another likely reason was the personal pain he would have suffered if he'd had to acknowledge that the war against Saddam might have been unnecessary. it would have been very difficult for anyone, much less the president, to confront the realization that his own decision was a mistake. An honest statement of the facts would have served Bush better, something like, "We now know that Saddam was a less serious threat than we believed. Still, the war was just and justified. Saddam was a brutal dictator, guilty of many crimes against humanity. He had an opportunity to come clean, but chose continued defiance. What is important now is that we continue to work together on a consensus way forward to a successful outcome, one we can all agree on. That is how we, here at home, will best serve our troops fighting abroad and honor the sacrifices that so many of them have made and are making." But Bush was not one to look back once a decision was made. Rather than suffer any sense of guilt and anguish, Bush chose not to go down the road of self-doubt or take on the difficult task of honest evaluation and reassessment. Rather than look back, he would always look forward, focused on the challenges of the future rather than the regrets of the past. That was especially true when it came to a decision as irrevocable and consequential as war in Iraq. But at times, Bush had no choice but to face those doubts. He believed one of his most important responsibilities as a wartime president was to visit the wounded and comfort the families of the fallen. He did so frequently, in Washington and during his travels around the country. I would shadow him in such settings.